Hello, and welcome to the Thinking Elixir podcast, where we cover the news of the community and learn from each other. My name is Mark Erickson.
And I'm David Bernheisel.
Let's jump into the news. First up, the Erlang Ecosystem Foundation has released community-maintained, pre-built macOS builds for OTP.
I am so excited about this. Every time we do a minor bump, we have to go find WX widgets. We have to go find, wait 20 minutes for it to compile, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So if you're wondering how to use this with ASDF, it's covered here as an alternative ASDF Erlang plugin. So we have a link to the how to use the pre-built macOS release. It's just funny because, you know, when you install Elixir, the releases are all pre-built and just like the install is like immediate. And then I'm on Linux, right, as my desktop. So I'm still doing the whole full build. But for all y'all out there with the macOS machines, it's like, well, you get that extra little boost.
Linux folks are used to that anyway. For the most part, and mostly in newer versions of OTP, this will also include, you know, OpenSSL and WX widgets. Those are probably the two like notable dependencies that OTP needs. And so there are combinations, you know, of all those versions. Not that we want all of the combinations. It's just that those are some of the things that can change, you know, over time, and those will become part of the pre-built binaries. You're probably, if you're on a Mac and you're still a developer for other things, you're probably still going to have OpenSSL installed. So whatever, but WX widgets in particular, I know it can be pretty problematic sometimes to get installed. And I'm just going to assume, I didn't see it said, but I'm going to assume that they have docs built in as well to these OTP releases, because that was another thing for me, one of the flags that I would use is to include docs.
Yeah. Yeah, that is handy.
All right. Next up, Elixir NX is gaining the ability to shard your NX functions.
Ooh.
All right. Yeah, there's a lot of detail. So most of this of what you should learn from this is on Dockyard's blog. So I'm going to try to simplify it as much as I can, which is, if you could imagine your code was split by the use of their variables, right? And then processed in parallel as much as possible until later shards would need the results from the earlier shards. And that's as best as I can try to say it.
We might have to have someone come on and help us understand this a little deeper.
Yeah, like I'm so used to database sharding, so like this is not quite like that. But if you could read your code like from top to bottom, there's probably little logical segments in there that like, okay, I need to prep my variables and I need to do, you know, other things, and then at the very end I kind of accumulate or aggregate all of the things at the end. And so sharding is just an attempt to make that concurrent as well, I guess, right? Or parallel. I'm not sure which one's being had here. I presume it's all going to be simultaneous. But anyway, so Elixir NX, just those defn functions, mind you, is gaining the ability to shard your code.
Well, the cool thing about running functions on CUDA, it is all very functional. It is all very intended to be parallelized. So yeah, the idea of like sharding a function, that's a whole new concept. Very cool. And next up, Peter Ulrich and Alex Kootmos released a new paid library called Phoenix to Ban, PHX to the number two ban. You've probably heard of fail to ban. That's very common in Linux and Unix systems. The whole idea is, with fail to ban, is if you have multiple failed authentication attempts from a single IP, just detect that and then totally block any future requests from that IP. It's like, oh, they've demonstrated that they are a bad actor, so we're just going to ignore them. So yeah, being able to add that to the web application layer is pretty cool. So this is a Phoenix built-in piece, and it says it is a firewall that analyzes your traffic and blocks bad actors without slowing down legitimate traffic. Very cool. So we have a link to where that's being shared. And really, we don't have very many options for paid libraries in the Elixir space. So this is remarkable just because it is one that's being offered. And so it'll be interesting to see how it's delivered and how well it works for people. And just as a business model, how well this works. It would be great to be able to have something where projects could support themselves. It doesn't have to be like, hey, this is my new job, but like just to be able to support the continued effort to maintain and add features.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good evolution too of like basic rate limiting is what a lot of folks will go for.
Yep.
So even if it is illegitimate, at least it's a small, it's a slower illegitimate, you know, that's a snooping, I guess, of what's around your app. So you'll typically evolve into this direction anyway. So I think that's a smart move.
Yep.
All right. We got a couple of interesting PRs that I saw in Phoenix Live View. So before I go into some of those interesting PRs, first of all, they're PRs. So they may not merge and they may turn into something else. Who knows? Just thought it was interesting. And also, since we're looking at Phoenix Live View here, the milestone, by the way, for 1.0 is at 100% right now. So nice. It hasn't gone unnoticed. So prepare thyself. All right. Well, so among these PRs, there's like three of them. There's a PR to keep assigns between live navigation, right? So if you're going from like an index from one live view to another live view, you're probably using some sort of like on mount hook in your live views to basically fetch the current user, probably something along those lines. And it's kind of a shame that you have to load that current user four times, I think, right? So once on the static load, once to reconnect with the WebSocket, and then when you push navigate to another live view, you do that all over again. So it's probably four times in there. I might have that slightly wrong, but it's more than necessary. Let me put it that way. And so the idea is to avoid some of that database reloading when it doesn't, when it's not really necessary. Again, I don't know where this will land. I'm sure there needs to be some security perspectives, you know, on this as well. But thought that would be cool. That would help overload the database, maybe. Who knows? All right. Well, there's another PR to reserve the curly brackets for the Heeks syntax. So in Heeks syntax, there's the curly brackets when you're in like a tag. All right, so you're like, you want to interpolate a value into an HTML tag or one of your functional components tags. That's cool. But there's the other one, which is like the traditional EEX interpolation, which is that angle bracket percent equals kind of stuff.
Yep.
And it's just generally inconsistent on when you would do which, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of have the rules in my head now. I'm kind of used to it, but I do kind of like just go curly brackets and then, that's right. I can't do that. You know, like I got to go back up and go to the EEX one. So the idea here is to, quote, eventually use the same interpolation syntax across the board, which means they would be picking the curly brackets here. So you wouldn't have to use the, I don't know what to call it. It's not legacy, but just like the EEX interpolation one, yeah. the longer one. Let me put it that way. So type less, yay. Grog doesn't have to type as much. So we'll see where that goes, but I think some consistency would be great.
Just looking at the PR, because I know in other languages, like especially front-end JavaScript SPAs and stuff, one of the common things that I'd seen years ago was the double curly brackets, which they called handlebars, for doing the way of interpolating it into like the regular HTML. And this PR does not set up for doing that. It's not doing the double handlebar. So it's interesting because, you know, because then I think, well, how do I escape it if I actually want the curly brackets in my output? You know, so like I haven't looked into it all, but yeah, I'm sure they're thinking of all that. But yeah, it's just, it's interesting. It's cool to see how it might all get unified.
Yeah. It's in there. You'd have to escape it with a slash or something. But yeah,
okay.
There's a last one is that there's a PR to introduce a concept called PHX Portal, Phoenix Portal. So SPAs have this concept already. The general idea is that sometimes you need a component to render a thing way, way somewhere else on the page outside of the usual DOM tree that you're kind of like rendering within, right? Mm-hmm. So think modals, think tooltips or banners or something like that. It's just the global layout kind of stuff. Don't get your hopes up on this one. This one's, they're already saying probably not going to do it, but it was a proof of concept. And I thought that was interesting because I know that there's some issues with that. It's like one of the first issues I run into when I'm like writing a live view app that has global navigation.
Yeah.
Somehow. And so, yeah, this is just a proof of concept. I thought it was interesting. It's less likely to make it because they're pointing to a native browser concept that I don't use enough called dialogue. It's just a dialogue. Angle brackets dialogue, like HTML element dialogue. It's a native HTML element that is a modal. All right, so here comes the standard David Bernheisel rant. Don't use modals, and you won't have any of these awful problems. All right, there you go. There's my rant. Okay, but it is nice to know that dialogue is built in. So stop inventing your own thing. So there's that. But the other hand is, I know that not everything can probably fit into a dialogue, or it's not a modal necessarily. It's just some other use case. So. It's that pile of use cases that might have a legitimate use case for something like PHX Portal, because the SPAs are probably onto something. So I don't know. We'll see. All right. Well, that's it for all the PRs that I found interesting in Phoenix Live View. All those ones that we talked about, I'm just going to guess they're probably not going to be in 1.0 Phoenix Live View
right.
At this point, but maybe in the near future or late future.
And next up. Gleam is preparing for a new release, version 1.6.0. They have RC1 is now out. So I was checking out the change log, and it's really hefty. There's a lot of stuff in here, a lot of build tool improvements, compiler improvements with improved error output when there's issues. As I'm looking through this, I'm noticing there's a lot of contributions. A lot of this is coming from the community, which is wonderful to see. Then there's like formatter improvements. And then as we've talked before, the Gleam project's language server is actually part of the language. So there's language server improvements as well, along with a whole host of bug fixes. So if you're active in the Gleam space, you probably already know about it, but this is certainly one to watch. And in RC, you know, that's get a little early trial on it and give your feedback on how things go. But yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah. All right. Hey, last one up before we talk about conferences, but the Elixir type system work is going pretty well, as evidenced by a couple of Jose Valim tweets. The tweets are here. This is cool. This is so cool. It can identify dead code now, which is nice. I recall there is a mixed task called mix.unused, I think.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of, it uses the XREF code compilation kind of stuff, but it's incomplete, I think, for certain reasons. It doesn't catch everything. And so I think this type system, it just inherently, by the way, it has to work to check exhaustively all the types anywhere and everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. It has to, it's not just function signatures. It's the code in your functions, the case statements on stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's two examples of Jose going into Postgrex and LiveView where he's just deleting old code that just it's just dead. It will never be reached. So fantastic. Can't wait for that to come around to everyone else. But very, very cool to see that the type system, not that anyone had doubts that it had stalled, but nice to see some progress.
Yeah, what I love about that is how practical it is. Because I know I've worked with people where like, it's like there's a party whenever there's the big code deletion, you know, PRs. Like this PR like removes 1,000 lines. It's like, woohoo, let's
party. Yeah, instant approve.
Yeah, so being able to spot that stuff in the large applications that lots of us are maintaining, that's a win. I love it. Mm-hmm. And next up, Elixir is Weird Conference has a call for talks. So the Elixir is Weird Conference is a single day, single track event in Providence, Rhode Island, in the U.S. on April 17th in 2025.
You can probably tell by the name. Elixir is weird. This ain't your typical conference.
Should I come as a character? Like, is there anything like that?
No, I don't think they're saying that. but it's anything they're doing with Elixir that would be considered weird, cool, or just fun. So if you're looking for something like outside the norm, creative side projects, that kind of stuff, I would probably consider like Sonic Pi to be one of those kinds of projects, right? So something along those lines, that's what they're looking for this conference.
Yeah, from the Elixir Conf, the last Elixir Conf, there was the one talk where it was taking an old rotary phone and making it actually functional as a cell phone.
Right.
That would qualify, yeah.
Yeah, I'm totally guessing, but yeah, that seems to be the ticket there. All right, so that's Elixir is Weird. That's in Providence, Rhode Island. There's another one on the European side of the world, AlchemyConf. It's being held in Braga, Portugal. Kind of a twofer here. So, yes, AlchemyConf, go sign up if you're in Europe. But the other bit is that Sasha Urich has announced that he'll be speaking there, which he's always going to headline, right? But secondly, he says that he's considering a different presentation style and he's going to be probably speaking less overall. So anyway, just thought that was interesting. For March 31st through the April 3rd, AlchemyConf, a beautiful venue, by the way, it looks like. But yeah, that's AlchemyConf. All right. Yeah. And that's it. That's it for the news. Hey, and I guess just a bit of personal news too. So Blue Sky has really blown up, by the way. So Blue Sky is definitely a vibrant community at this point. It's not going to feel dead. I have made the choice myself. No one else needs to make this choice, but I made the choice to, if I'm adding a social media network, I'm going to delete a social media network.
Don't just add more.
No one needs more. Right. So I've not like closed my account or anything. It's not that I just won't be looking at X anymore, or Twitter, or the old Twitter, the grave of Twitter, at least. So I won't be there. You know, my handle's still there. DMs will probably be lost. I just don't have the app. Maybe I'll come across it once in a while. But if you're an Elixir developer and you're trying to like get cool things noticed out there, and you're just secretly hoping that thinking Elixir here is going to just find it, I'm not going to find it personally. Maybe Mark will, but I'm not going to find it personally on X anymore. So I would highly encourage you, dear Elixir listener that wants to broadcast their good work, go on to Blue Sky at this point, and or all of your other local social media places, like the Elixir Lane Discord channel or the Elixir Lane Slack channel. Those are also good places.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, there you go. If you're trying to market yourself, Blue Sky ought to be in the rounds nowadays.
Yeah, and I noticed, I saw a news item that Blue Sky had taken on 700,000 users in a week or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, big movement. Yeah, I've noticed a whole bunch of big uptick. Because like when it first started being talked about, I jumped on, created an account, and it was kind of crickets, you know. So I was just like, I kept the account. I was like, well, I'll kind of post stuff to it occasionally when I'm already posting somewhere else. But yeah, it has really taken off. So it's really neat to see. And I know lots of people have different reasons for the places where they like to consume and like to hang out. So just making sure that if you weren't already aware, that that is an excellent opportunity to connect with a lot of Elixir community.
Yeah. What I originally got on the Twitter for was for the tech Twitter community. They were accepting, kind, data-driven, you know, that welcoming, that kind of thing. I can't really say that that's what X is like anymore. It's just really not that to me anymore. And Blue Sky gave me those same feelings, those same vibes. Like it's still accepting. It's open. It's warm. A lot of very smart people on there talking about all their smart things that they're doing. It's what tech Twitter was at this point. And for bonus points, you don't get weird algorithmic stuff pop up in your feed anymore. And I'm sure Blue Sky will figure themselves out one day, and they have to make money and support themselves. But for what it's worth, there's no ads on there right now. So it's a lot cleaner of an experience.
Nice. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us next time on Thinking Elixir.